Welcome to the Women and Wealth podcast with Esther Szabo. Esther is a respected leader in the field of personal financial advice with over 25 years of experience. After going through her own significant and challenging life-changing events, she overcame fear and self-doubt to launch her own successful advisory firm. Now Esther is ready to share her practical and personal experiences to help other women clear their hurdles and brave life's transitions. In this way, she inspires women to lead fulfilling and confident lives.
Hello and welcome to Women and Wealth with Esther Szabo from Gates Pass Advisors. Last week, Esther talked about personal issues, transitions, and really, it was exciting. I loved it because she was talking about an upcoming wedding that she's in. She happens to be one of the two main parties.
I'm very much in that wedding, yes.
I'm hoping so. No cold feet here. So she really got personal and shared a transition that she's going to be going through and really spoke about that and what that looks like. And she decided to come back this week and do the same thing, except for it's another personal issue. And I thank you, Esther, for being able to do that and open up about it. And this transition isn't exactly as happy or exciting as a wedding. Why don't you share and start us off with what we're talking about today?
Sure. This, Eric, is a transition that is about aging parents. My mom, my dad passed away about 10 years ago. My mom she just turned 95 almost. She is 95, and it's a transition of navigating as our parents age, what that mm-hmm. is like.
Yeah, and each person's journey is different because, again, maybe both their parents are aging and both their parents are still around. Yeah. Maybe they're a single child compared to having brothers and sisters that can help. So, I mean, it's got to be very, very interesting when dealing with these types of situations. Now, I know you're going to share your specific scenario. So how do you even begin to navigate this? And I believe you have siblings, if I'm not mistaken. Is that correct?
I do. I have two older sisters.
All right. So yeah, I noticed that you put the emphasis on older sisters. Just point it out. You know, I do the same thing. This is how I introduce my sister as well. I only have one sister, but I say, this is my much older sister. Right. And then I get punched in the ribs. But whatever.
Right. It used to be the thing to, I got so tired of being called out being the youngest, and somehow it's become a lot more comfortable over the years.
Yeah. I bet. Okay. So how do you guys tackle this together?
Well, I think one of the things is it's never a convenient time. I think unlike working through transitions where, let's say it's for a wedding, which has, we're dealing with a lot of planning, and that's mm-hmm. challenging in terms of the time. This is also challenging in terms of it's not a convenient time to say, okay, I'm going to slot this in to work on this project on mm-hmm. such and such a day. When dealing with family member and a parent, it's just not on your schedule. And I think to just recognize that and to acknowledge that it's not about being selfish and just like, oh, this, you know, and whiny. It's like, oh, this is hard. It's hard to navigate a loved one's needs when they just pop out of nowhere, really. They mm-hmm. can't be scheduled. And that's been some of the things that we've worked on together. I want to give a little bit of background and color to my mom's life, just briefly.
Yeah, please.
At the very first podcast, I talked about my experience growing up in a financially chaotic home, and she was obviously impacted by that as well. But if I rewind further back in her life, she put herself through college in the late 40s, achieved a science degree. She had grown up during the Great Depression and World War II. And when she graduated, she was the first of her six siblings to have a college degree. She worked in her profession. She grew up, was born and raised in Canada, worked across Canada in her profession, which was a chemist. And she met my father when he was in New Haven, Connecticut, studying at Yale for another graduate degree. And she had gone down to Yale to work in the Pfizer labs, where she had met a friend up in Montreal, a very good friend. And that person had come down to New Haven, and she basically said, okay, let me go check out life in the States. My mom had a very enthusiastic and explorative bent to her and was always curious to see other places. Mm-hmm. And in 1957, when my oldest sister was born, there really was not a lot of social acceptability for childcare. It really was, you were looked down upon if you asked someone else to care for your child while you went to work. I mean, that meant you were a bad mom. Mm-hmm. So she left her profession to raise her kids. And then fast forwarding to when she was in her late 50s, after many anxious years with my dad and how he was handling the family finances, he did declare bankruptcy. And our home, which is a home that they had purchased together, renovated, and owned for over 20 years at that point, and the mortgage had been completely paid off, that home was sold as a result of his bankruptcy, and she lost her home. So my sisters and I have actually navigated a number of transitions with her. My mom is you know, if her history doesn't tell, my mom's a very strong, very independent woman. She's extremely practical minded. In fact, she recently said to one of my sisters, you know, when I die, you'll be sad, but you'll get over it.
Yeah. Well, there you go.
Well, okay. Glad we have a plan.
Yeah.
And the first of the transitions that we worked on with her or approached her about was when she was in her late 60s. And my sisters and I were really wondering, like, what is her financial situation? We don't really know. She was at that point living in an apartment of a home where she was taking care of the senior members of that home. She was their primary caregiver and also did other work in the community, taking care of people's kids, cleaning their homes, doing all of that. And we were like, well, how is she for her future? What should we expect? And I know that there are many listeners, I've seen it and heard it with my clients, who are in the same boat. They don't know what situation their mom and dad or one or the other is in financially. And it's a very taboo discussion. It's one that we don't talk about. We do not ask or discuss finances typically in families.
Yeah. Yep. I agree.
And so because I was in the profession of financial planning and guidance, guess who was elected to approach about this discussion?
The youngest sister.
The youngest sister. And so my mom also, because she is so practically minded, she's very proud. And on the flip side of pride can be shame. She also has and had a lot of guilt and shame about what happened with my dad, about how far they fell. And so it was a very sensitive discussion. At this point, when she was in her late 60s, they were no longer married. My dad had returned to his native country where he was born and raised in Europe, and she was here still in the States. And it was not an easy thing just to say, well, Mom, where are your finances? How are you set up? Mm-hmm. Because how is she going to answer, oh, I'm fine. Everything's fine.
Exactly. Exactly. We never want our children to worry, right? I mean, you know, that's the answer. It's going to be, oh, no, we're good.
We're good. Everything's okay. And they certainly, she felt bad enough about their situation. And although I assured her up and down, it was, I think now she's let it go, but it can still pop up that when it came time for my college, there wasn't funds for it. And even though I've assured her, you know what? I'm graduated. I'm good. I have a degree. I'm fine. I'm working. It's great. It was still another thing that was sensitive for her. So what I practiced doing is just little drops. Like they talk about it in marketing. You do drip marketing. You just touch people, say, hey, I'm here. And you come back 2 weeks later and say, hey, I'm here. And I did that with my mom in terms of, well, gosh, you know, I'm just curious, Mom, do you have an IRA? No, I don't have an IRA. Oh, okay. All right. Can I ask what savings you have? Oh, yeah, I have a little here and there. Can I ask where it is? Yeah, it's here. Do you mind if I see the statements? Okay, if you have to see the statements. Here they are. Fine. Go ahead.
The dripping worked. Yay.
And I just really remember, I have a very clear memory of sitting in her, she was cooking something at the stove. I'm sitting at the table and just chatting about these things and inwardly just watching my own state of being. Am I getting anxious? Am I getting fearful? Am I getting frustrated? Because once I started going there, that was something also I had to watch, because it's going to impact the person, you know, my mom in that case, the person who's on the receiving. It's not something to get into a power struggle about. It's really something, if she started to get kind of what we call growly, because my mom can start to kind of growl, like, leave me alone. I can say, okay, you know, I'm okay to leave you alone. I just need to let you know that this is what goes on for me. I can't help it. I worry about you. Don't worry about me. You don't have to worry about me. Well, you know, I wish it were that easy. Can I come back and talk to you again about this? Maybe in a couple weeks. Oh, okay. So it had to go very slowly. And for people like me, who, first of all, I think one of the biggest challenges for me is like, hey, I do this for a living. You know what? Why aren't you paying attention to?
Exactly. Right.
And I think that's one of the hardest things, is that our parents always see us as their kids. And where was I in the late, when she was in her 60s, then I would have been in my 20s. So again, she's looking at me as just this young pup. So it was good, though. I was able to find out after some time information about where she was. And it wasn't like it was perfect. I mean, it wasn't like it gave me complete relief, because she really didn't have that much money. But she was working. She was doing all of this domestic work. She never complained about it. She just took care of people. Her big thing in life is to be of service to people. And she was thrilled, actually, to have her own means of making money, because for so many years, it had been anxiety producing for her, being dependent upon my dad and how he handled the money. So the next transition after that was when she actually was able to purchase a home herself in upstate New York when she was about 76.
Oh, wow.
So she was able to move and set herself up and get into a place. And she still continued to work. She took the initiating factor was a friend of the family and a neighbor adopted a baby, and they needed somebody there. And my mom moved right across the street to this house and took care of them and found other situations for herself. So after that, the next transition was really in her early 80s. It's like the same question. She was still working, still taking care of things. And it was the same issue. It was, Mom, what's your plan for when you're not working or driving? And
yeah, that's a tough conversation to have.
It is a tough conversation to have. I'm grateful. Well, in some ways, what her response was is, oh, I'll just go into one of these low income, you know, I'll just go into a nursing home, basically, was her answer. And it didn't sit well with my sister and I, who live out here. My sister back in New York was engaged in other pursuits of her own. So my sister and I out here were just talking about, well, maybe she could come out here. I wonder if she'd be willing to come out to California. That's a big move. We know my mom well enough to say the reason she was talking about, well, I'll just go into a nursing home, is because she didn't want to be a bother. She didn't want to be trouble.
Exactly. We don't want to be a burden to our kids. We want our kids to be successful. We want our kids to have their own life. And if we are going to be that burden in our own minds to them, it means I'm going to derail everything that they've worked so hard for all these years. And that's just not true, because, well, for most people, I would say that our hearts are in tune with making sure that our parents are taken care of. And if we're not sure that they're getting the best treatment possible, best care possible, that's going to be more of a stressor than having mom and dad live nearby.
Right. Right. And that's, I think that's the thing, when I'm speaking and working with and putting plans together with my older clients who are in their 70s, and they do look around this area where we live and go, oh gosh, I really want to help my kids. They're trying to get their kids through school. They're trying to maybe purchase a home here, and the assets can leave. That's one of the biggest challenges and that occur are is parents giving their assets away to their kids in support of their lives, which is wonderful. And at the same time, one of the things I point out is, and what about you for your life when you're in your late 80s and 90s? How will you be taken care of? Do you have the resources? Mm-hmm. I mean, my concern is there does not look like if you gift it away that there will be enough for you. And then it could set up a situation like the one I'm in, which is it's my responsibility to be sure that my mom has the care that she needs, which is exactly what my mom doesn't want me worrying about. And as you just said, most parents don't want their kids worrying about.
And a lot of parents think that there is this, you know, I don't want to be a burden. And like your mom said, I'll go into this facility right. And Medicaid will pay for it, or Medicare, excuse me. One of the two, I can't remember which one it is, but that'll pay for it. And just about 2 weeks ago, the small town where my parents live, there was a gentleman that lived in a small little trailer there, and he had no other means. And so he is now in a nursing home. But the only thing that Medicare is paying for is a room that he shares with somebody else. He doesn't even have room for his own little items. And one item he wants to take is a lamp that just he can't even fit in his in his room. And that a lamp that his mother gave him. And it's a sad situation. He has no privacy, and that's where he's going to spend the rest of his days.
Right. And it's Medicaid. In California, it's called Medi-Cal, but it's true. It's all shared space. When you're in a nursing and you're on Medicaid or Medi-Cal here, it's all shared space with someone else with very little. And my mom will say, oh, it's fine. But yeah, you're exactly right. It's like, well, that's not how I want you to live. Mm-hmm. So we did do some planning for her move to California, just looking. I think one of the things always that I find with clients, regardless of what the situation is, people go, well, I'd like to do this, or I'm thinking about doing that, you know, and so they have a vision, which is great. So the next step to that vision is often do some research, do some footwork, find out, okay, what does it cost for X type of situation? So in my case, my sister and I here, we're looking at what would it cost for my mom to live independently, because my mom at that time, especially, she was still working. She worked until she was 85 as a caregiver to others. And so what would it take to live independently for my mom in California? And the first thought that might come up is like, oh, that's really expensive. That's just, you know, not going to happen. Mm-hmm. Well, I live in Silicon Valley. My sister lives in Northern California. If listeners have heard about the awful, awful, devastating Paradise fire. She lives not too far from Paradise. So that's in Butte County. And the costs are greatly lower up there. And so what happened was my mom actually, she has macular degeneration. And she knew she wasn't supposed to drive at night. So she never did, but she did drive early in the morning before the sun came up. So, which is basically night. So, and where was she going? She was going to help one of her senior clients get ready for her senior client to go to daycare. She was going to work, and she had an accident. Thank God nobody was hurt. I think, and her car was totaled though. And that was the initiating thing that brought her to California.
Gotcha.
And one of the things I've always been impressed about with her is she didn't, I see this with clients also who are considering moving. And it is, I think I'd be the same as some of these other clients. It would be hard to move at 80s. Mm-hmm. What if I move in my 50s? That just seems, I mean, it was hard for me to move to California when I was 30. It was devastating to leave my community. So in my 80s, and she just, again, I think it's that very practical bent that she has. She said, okay, she came out here. She did a visit to the different places up in Butte County. She can rent a nice one bedroom in a 55 and older low-income complex for, I think now 10 years that she's been there. Now the rent's pushing, it's just under $500.
Wow.
And so that worked. And moving her here was a project, but I helped her. I flew out there. My sister helped on this side, getting everything ready here. And it really always just requires communication and sensitivity to all involved. Mm-hmm. That actually was a very easy move in retrospect. She just came and she plugged herself in. So now it's 10 years on, and now she is in her mid-90s. She's 95. And we really are dealing with this transition now that she is experiencing cognitive decline. Her memory loss is high. It is significant. And again, though, I don't think any of us really change who we are. She is still fiercely independent. And it's navigating the transition of how to step into her space without her feeling helpless.
Yeah.
And again, there's no good time. You can't schedule when I'm going to deal with this or when my sister is going to deal with this. And it is somewhat, and if we go back to the stages of transition, which are anticipation, when you're anticipating a transition, and ending, when something has actually finished and you can't go back, to passage, to the new normal. It's almost like there's several things going on at once. There is an anticipation of further decline. Mm-hmm. There is an ending of my mom being as independent as she was even 9 months ago. And there's also a passage of dealing with navigating all of this. So it's kind of all going on at once. And I think one of the, and let me be more specific about the things that we're dealing with, and it's all three of us as daughters, it's what support to provide her with. Mm-hmm. What is she willing to accept? She still lives in her own place, and we have looked at assisted living communities in her area, and it's very limited availability because there was the Paradise Fire. The Paradise Fire displaced an entire community, mm-hmm. an entire town. And those have been absorbed into the town she lived, which is Chico. And they've also had to go elsewhere because there wasn't enough in Chico. So again, that's not convenient. It didn't come on a schedule. There's an awful thing like a devastating fire in her community. So we've looked at what's available with her. And we've agreed together with her, let's see if we can keep you at home for less than what you'd have to pay monthly to go in there. We can bring more care in. But we had to have her promise because we had brought in care and she had kept sending them away. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. They would knock on the door and say, I'm here to help. And she would say, no, thanks. I don't need any help.
I'm
have
good.
Have a nice day.
Yeah, that's right.
And I would pay the bill. And we would go on, but we sat down and said, you know, you have to let them in, Mom. If you want to stay here, can we make that agreement with one another? And she said, yes. The other thing is we need to spend more time with her. She needs more one-on-one time with people. She again is very independent. She's never been a hugely social person. She enjoys people, but then she reaches her limit and she's ready to be on her own again. So I live 3.5 hours away. I go up once a month for the weekend. My sister who lives closer is in and out. My other sister who lives on the East Coast is coming more frequently to spend a week at a time with her, and then bringing in other people who can, and that's my sister who's up there, coordinates just stopping in and visits and connection.
Yeah, and that's so important.
It's really important. It's one of the reasons people do suffer cognitive decline because they're not getting enough interaction. It's a great reason for people to move into an assisted living community or a retirement community of some point because it really helps the brain stay active because they are engaging with more. And if people are staying in, that really dulls the mind. I mean, just think if you and I just stayed in our house for a week, which actually sounds quite lovely to me.
Where are you going with this, Esther? I like that idea.
I know, exactly. We just, you know, turned off and didn't have our busy schedules of one thing after another. We might find, maybe not after a week, but maybe after a month, that we would be a lot more dull And yes. That is one of the things that happens with seniors. And it is challenging to find resources. We don't have a very great setup in communities to navigate this. We have, you know, for that skilled nursing, for the very, you know, either the worst situation financially or the worst situation health-wise. Mm-hmm. But for those who are pretty much together and even have family checking in, they still need more. And we are continuing to look at resources for that.
Yeah. And the thing is it, what gets me about this is that you tackled this early. And that's where I think a lot of families don't, because they're afraid of the conversation. Nobody talks, yeah. You know, that the people don't talk about money. So they don't have that conversation up front. And then even if it's in the most caring way, they just don't feel like they can start that process. And the problem is that when you get to a point, it's almost like a sandwich. You at the very beginning, your parents may be prideful. They don't want your help. They don't need your help. They still look at you as a younger child, if you will. But they are also aware of possible problems. And so their problem-solving ability, their rational thinking is still there. And you may make some headway with that, you know, by broaching the subject or bringing that up. And as they begin to age a little bit even further, kind of what you were talking about, where your mom was kind of mid-70s, she still wants to be independent, but at the same time, she still has the ability to make a decision what's best for her and say, you know what, this is actually probably correct. This is, I am going to need a little bit more help with this. And so the pride goes down just a little bit. I mean, as far as in a positive way, mm-hmm. they're more willing to accept help because they know, okay, I am aging. I am slower than I used to be. These stairs are a lot harder than they used to be. And so they're in that sweet spot, if you will. The problem becomes when people delay too long, mm-hmm. because with cognitive decline, you also have a decline of rational thinking. Mm-hmm. You have a decline of that problem-solving ability to where they will just revert to basic emotion, which is usually anger. I'm mm-hmm. fine. Leave me alone. Mm-hmm. So on and so forth. Even though there's very good reason, like a car accident, like, you know, a fall, things that they need mm-hmm. to recognize. There are things that we need to do to better your house, better your environment, better your transportation. What does that look like and how do we get it done? You can't delay that conversation because then they're just not rational about the accepting that help at that late stage. So I think you really hit the sweet spot. And my question to you after all that blathering, sorry, but how do the discussions go with your clients since everyone's situation is different? Like we spoke about at the beginning of this podcast, everyone's situation is different. How do those discussions go with your clients? How does that work?
Well, one of the things that I've done, and before I answer that, I'm just going to say one thing because of my cognitive sure. decline, I will forget. But one of the things is I think it's so important to go slowly. If it, the earlier we do it, one of the things that really helped was to go slowly, and there was time to mm-hmm. not get it all solved in one exactly. conversation. It took years. It took years. And when we push our parents, because we are so used in our lives, especially my parents, they grew up in the, you know, in the Depression. I mean, mm-hmm. they didn't take a plane until they were in their 30s or 40s. So it's a very different speed of life that they're used to. We are used to a much more sped up situation because of our adoption of technology. So to go slow is really critical. What I've observed sometimes that just makes me cringe is when adult children just push their parents and say, come on, mm-hmm. come on, I've got to figure this out. And it makes me cringe because it feels so disrespectful, like it is talking down to them. Mm-hmm. And none of us want that. So I think the main thing is just to meet them where they are and to listen, and then to put it into this is how this hits me. I just need you to know this. With my clients, to answer your question, is what I've done on several occasions is actually invited the family, the adult children and the parents, let's have a meeting together. Let's mm-hmm. have a very open agenda. It's been parents with their adult children. So the parents have been the clients. Let's have an open discussion about these things and about your finances, about what you're concerned about with the children and whether or not they need to receive funds, what the children are concerned in terms of accepting funds, where things are. And I go through that with the parents, because in this case, the clients again have been the parents, in advance to say, what are your limits about what you want to share? What is it that you want to get out of this discussion? What do you want to convey? And what do you want to hear? And what do you want to learn? How do you want to bound it? But what do you want to say? And those are wonderful. They have been received very well by all parties, and they are really engaging for me to deliver that, because I'm there as the facilitator and to answer questions if needed, but it really facilitates the conversation with them. And what I've observed is just very loving families who just need a little bit of navigation to get going, and then they really can connect. And it's wonderful to be a part of.
Yeah, absolutely. And the ability, not going to say that you can be the bad guy, but in a way, when a parent tells you, well, this is my limit, this is what I don't want to discuss with them, if it's something that is important that they do need to be able to convey to their children, you can then bring up a good rationale. You know what? I'd love for you to rethink that, because if we could talk about this, that will help in this process. All of a sudden, it's like, you know, when we tell our children something and we tell them 100 times, but then your neighbor tells them the same thing, and all of a sudden it's a light bulb. You're like, really? I told you that 1,000,000 times. And it's the same thing in reverse. You know, we want to tell our parents, hey, this would help if you did this. They don't necessarily listen to us, but Esther, they listen to you because, well, you're the expert, right? You're the third party.
Yeah. And it's a way to practice that conversation in advance. I really appreciate that you brought that up to say, okay, well, I get that feels uncomfortable. Let's look at it. Would you be willing to look at it this way and how it could be beneficial all around? And it does move out. There are these, we talk about with transitions, one can be in flow. One can be in struggle, and there's also, you can have both. I mean, again, it's not a black and white thing, but in struggle, one of the emotions that can come up is combative or having a very narrow focus. So what you're talking about is, okay, that's a narrow focus. Let's bring it out a bit and enlarge it. And then it can move one more into flow, which can leave one more refreshed, energized, more realistic, more resilient. And all of that just helps support a healthier, longer life.
Now, this has been fantastic, and I would love to go on, but we're running short on time for sure. But before we wrap this up, I want to ask, do you have any resources that you use personally or that you suggest to your clients who are going through this type of transition?
I have a great reference book that I think is really well written. It's called How to Care for Aging Parents. How to Care for Aging Parents. It's by Virginia Morris, and it goes through all different levels of health and, you know, the driving issue, what to look for, what to see, what steps to take, what are resources. And I highly recommend that book as a reference.
Fantastic. Anything else today? Any other closing thoughts?
I think the main thing is to, if you have a parent who you're concerned about, to get guidance from those on your own support team. Realize that there is no perfect answer. There's no perfect way to have that conversation, but just start in terms of a caring way and thoughtful way about what is your motive for starting it, and just step forward. Reach out. If people want to reach out to me in terms of how to help them with their parents, I'm happy to talk about it in terms of the financial. So I would say take that little step. Don't worry about crossing the Grand Canyon in one day. It's not going to happen.
Absolutely. That's the best advice. How do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time. Right. Little steps, right? Thank you, Esther. This is a fantastic podcast.
Thank you, Eric. Always appreciate it.
And thank you for listening to the Women in Wealth podcast with Esther Szabo. If you have not subscribed to the podcast yet, please click the subscribe now button below. This way, when Esther comes out with a new podcast, it'll show up directly on your listening device. This makes it much easier to share these podcasts with your friends and family. And this one, obviously, is a great one to share with friends or family that may be facing this type of transition. They need to hear this news early so that they can make those changes and make those baby steps right now. Again, thanks for listening today. For everyone at Gates Pass Advisors, this is Eric Johnson reminding you to live your best day every day. And we'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to the Women and Wealth podcast. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast so you receive notifications of new podcasts as they become available. Check out the website at www.gatespassadvisors.com for more information. This content is developed from sources believed to be providing accurate information. The information in this material is not intended as tax or legal advice. Please consult legal or tax professionals for specific information regarding your individual situation. The opinions expressed and material provided are for general information and should not be considered a solicitation for the purchase or sale of any security.